historic nights from Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. against the Sacramento Kings. Jalen Green tying his career high with 32 points and breaking a bunch of different rookie records. We're going to get into all of that. Kevin Porter Jr. notching the first career triple-double after having his first career triple-double wiped away because the NBA hates him, apparently. So KPJ having a really outstanding performance against the Kings as well. Do the Rockets maybe have something with Bruno Fernando in the mix? We're going to break it all down for you coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
With the second pick in the 2021 NBA Draft, the Houston Rockets select Jalen Green.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better every day. I'm going to keep perfecting my craft. And every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
What's up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and also host of Locked On NBA Mondays. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets. Man, what a game between the Houston Rockets and the Sacramento Kings. This was, just like the Spurs game, almost the perfect game if you are a Houston Rockets fan currently just eyeballing the hell out of the tankathon meter, because the Rockets played competitively. Jalen Green had an insane night. We're going to get into all of the records that he broke and just how, I mean, he had basically a historic performance. Kevin Porter Jr. notching his first career triple-double after having his actual first career triple-double waved off, unfortunately. KPJ with a really, really outstanding night in his own regard. And then not only that, KPJ, an area of KPJ's game that I've had a lot of concern with and many others have had some concern with as of late, that really shined in this game against the Kings. And then, hey, Usman Garuba got his first career start. Unfortunately, no Alperen Şengün in the lineup, but we'll talk about Usman Garuba, how he looked in the minutes that he received. And do the Rockets actually have something with Bruno Fernando, of all players? We're going to talk about all of that, but let's start with Jalen Green, who was absolutely electric in this game against the Sacramento Kings, finished with 32 points, tying his career high, 11 of 25 shooting, 6 of 14 from behind the three-point line. He is now the rookie record holder for most consecutive games for a rookie with five or more made three-pointers. He now has four games in a row of five or more made three-pointers as a rookie. That's all-time NBA history. Nobody else has a better record than that. Not Steph, not Dame, nobody. That is absurd. And then that's not the only record that he got. So not only that, Jalen Green, I mean, he capped off his month of March in a very, very loud way. Like, there is not a chance that Jalen Green is not or does not receive Rookie of the Month honors for the month of March. He's absolutely going to walk away with that accolade, which is exciting. It's going to be fun to talk about. His numbers for the month of March are just absurd. He averaged just under 21 points a night on 48% shooting from the floor, almost 40% shooting from the three-point line. He had 3.6 rebounds, 3.4 assists, half a steal, half a block, only 1.7 turnovers per game in about 33 and a half minutes per night. The numbers just jump off the page. Since the All-Star break, Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham have been the two best rookies in the NBA, period. That's just how good Jalen Green has been in this second half of the NBA season, or final one third. I hate that we call post All-Star break like second half of the season when there's only a third of the games left. But anyways, I digress. Really, really, really strong performance from Jalen Green, filled with a ton of highlights. I mean, this game was fun just because there were highlights on both sides. I mean, Davion Mitchell had a monster dunk early in the game. The Kings had tons of dunks on their end, tons of fun highlight level plays. And then on the Rockets end, I think my hands down my favorite play, and I want to know, like, what was your favorite moment, favorite play, favorite highlight from this game between the Rockets and Kings? Let me know in the YouTube comments. But Jalen Green, like, Josh Christopher gets the steal, right? Just manhandles one of the Kings players, rips the ball away, a man-sized steal, gets out in transition, has Jalen Green on the wing, and then just perfectly lofts the ball up towards the rim. Jalen goes up. Not only does Jalen get this ball, he gets it with one hand. All right, one hand, brings it back a little bit, and then dunks it home. I think it was hands down my favorite Jalen Green dunk of the year. Like, honest to God. I was even, after the game, I was even saying, like, just take a highlight, like, just take a highlight reel of all the dunks that Jaylen had in this game and just play this at next year's NBA dunk contest, because that's how insane some of the dunks that he had in this one were. He had the one off of, like, the backdoor cut where Bruno was posting up and Jaylen kind of shook his defender, cut back door, and Bruno hit him with a perfectly placed bounce pass. And then Jaylen just elevated one hand like tomahawk. Just, I mean, Jaylen Green dunks are loud. But even past all the high-flying, insane acrobatics, all of that, right? You know, we saw Jaylen continue to show the parts of his game that he's worked on, the parts that are making him such a lethal scorer, and why you see these flashes of superstardom in him, right? He had one drive where he went baseline, where he was trying to cross up the Kings defender, kind of brought the ball back, reloaded, got all the way in baseline, and then bodied up through the defender and finished, you know, and got the and one opportunity. Like, it's moments like that where earlier in the season, we wouldn't have seen that. We would have seen Jaylen make his, you know, boom, boom, 1-2 move and nothing's there. So then he kicks the ball back out to somebody else to you know, swing the ball back around the other direction. Now we're seeing him reload, reassess the defense, kind of get defenders tilted one way or another, and then reattack, right? So maybe he tries attacking middle first and it's not there, so he reloads and goes baseline, or vice versa. We're just seeing him make smarter decisions on the basketball floor. And it's been one of the most exciting things to see this season, is obviously the growth, you know, for Jaylen Green. But in addition to some of those other records that he broke, I think here's one that stands out, right? Rookies to average at least 20 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 48% shooting, and 59% true shooting in a calendar month, minimum 15 games played. Jaylen Green in March of 2022 and Michael Jordan in January of 1985. That's it. That is the list. The list does not go on past that. And even more exciting, I don't know if you could say it's even more exciting because Michael Jordan is the GOAT, but from a bit more of a Rocket-centric angle, Jaylen Green is the first Rockets rookie to have 30-plus points in back-to-back consecutive games since Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon. We are talking about future greatness here with Jaylen Green. The fact that some people were trying to label him a bust halfway through his first season in the NBA while he was still trying to get things figured out and trying to kind of understand his game and how to best, you know, attack and approach and just, you know, how to make himself an NBA player, right? Jaylen Green is going to be a terror for years to come. And the fact that the Rockets got him, the fact that the Rockets were able to pick him up at number 2 overall, and the fact that the Rockets didn't lose their pick in last year's NBA draft to go straight from James Harden directly into Jaylen Green, it's really unfair when you think about it. Like, other fan bases don't get this level of talent just gift wrapped to them, and the Rockets truly, truly lucked out with Jaylen Green. My one area of this game, obviously it came down to the wire, back-to-back games now, first against the Spurs, now against the Kings, where it comes down to the wire in the closing moments, and I think that final shot has to go to Jaylen Green. You know, I love Kevin Porter Jr. I love that he's hit some really big shots late in games for the Rockets this season. But here are my 2 points in this regard, right? One, I think Jaylen is a little bit more adept and better suited to take a difficult shot in the final closing moments just because of his insane leaping ability, right? He just shoots over guys. We've seen him, like, nail tons of buzzer beaters this season in the closing moments of, like, closing half, closing quarter, whatever, late in the shot clock, all those types of moments. So I think Jaylen should be the one to take that shot or to try to take that shot. And if it's not there, you put KPJ in position to be the guy, to be the catch and shoot, like, safety valve, right? Because KPJ is shooting over 45% on catch and shoot threes this season. So if you put him in that secondary position of, okay, Jaylen's trying to get the move, he's trying to shake the defender, oh man, it's not there, all right, let's dish it off to the side. Then instead of dishing it to a Josh Christopher who has to get up a hurried last second shot, you're dishing it to a KPJ who can maybe take a quick sidestep dribble or maybe just go straight up with the shot. And you're kind of, I guess, like, hedging a little bit on the ability for KPJ to make a catch and shoot shot in that possible scenario. But I'm not overly upset with the ending of this game because it does bode well for the Rockets and their ability to maintain a top pick in this year's NBA draft. We're going to talk about that as well a little bit in the third segment of today's show, just how the NBA draft lottery odds work, what happens if there's a two-way or a three-way tie in the lottery standings. But coming up, I do want to talk about Kevin Porter Jr., his impressive night, what stood out about his play against the Kings in this one specifically, an area of his game that I've had a little bit of concern with as of late, that actually he showed a lot of control and poise in this game with. But first, we're going to get there after a quick message from our friends over at NBA Top Shot. Because NBA Top Shot is the officially licensed NFT of the NBA. Connect with a passionate community of NBA fans across the globe and build your collection with your favorite moments from NBA history. NBA Top Shot is the future of what being an NBA fan looks like. It's part trading cards, part stock market, and part fantasy sports with a built-in loyalty program. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards and made it easier to buy, sell, and trade by removing the hassle of card grading, shoe boxes, and binders. Their 24/7 peer-to-peer marketplace lets you scroll through all of your favorite players and teams, and once you find the moment that you've been looking for, you can buy it in just a couple of clicks. And owning NBA Top Shot moments can get you access to unbuyable once-in-a-lifetime experiences. For example, last year, NBA Top Shot flew out a group of fans to Phoenix for Game 5 of the NBA Finals just for having Phoenix Suns moments in their collection. If you sign up today for NBA Top Shot, the best way to get your start is getting a starter pack. You can pull a moment of a superstar like LeBron or KD or James Harden. You can also pull a moment like a future, you know, future superstar, one of the top rookies in the NBA, maybe a Jalen Green moment, right? It's only $9. Head over to lockedon.nbatopshot.com to start building your collection today. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, let's talk a little bit about Kevin Porter Jr.'s performance in this game for the Houston Rockets. And what really stands out, right, before getting into the specifics on KPJ's performance, kind of bridging the gap here from Jalen Green in segment one to KPJ here in segment two. I mean, this Rockets team looks so much better when those two guys are the clear-cut number one, number two, like 1A, 1B focal point options for this Rockets team. And what I mean by that, right? Like, let's look at the numbers. Jalen Green, when Christian Wood is not in the lineup this season, is averaging 22 points a game, 2.3 boards, 2.7 assists, 45.5% shooting, 40% from three, 58.5% true shooting. Kevin Porter Jr., with no Christian Wood in the lineup, is averaging 21 a night, 7.6 rebounds, 6.8 assists, 48.7% shooting, 36.4% from three, 61.7 true shooting. There's something about when those two guys just know that they're the tip of the spear, they're going to be the ones kind of controlling and dictating what's happening within the Rockets offense and not having to defer to anybody else, knowing that those are the, you know, option one, option two, and everybody else is behind them in the pecking order. Pecking order is something that we've talked about a lot this season, right? There hasn't really been a clearly defined pecking order for the Rockets to where on any given night, maybe it feels like, oh, Christian Wood's supposed to get the most shots, or KPJ's trying to get the most shots, or Jalen Green's trying to get the most shots. Maybe EG's going to get the most shots. Suddenly, Garrison Matthews is off the bench and has as many shots as the starters, right? It doesn't make sense. Whereas when you've got just this, the lineup that the Rockets rolled out against the Kings and the same lineup that they rolled out against the Spurs, there's a very clearly defined hierarchy, and it's Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. at the top with everybody else falling in tow behind them. And I think that's what's making this Rockets team look so fun and exciting right now in these closing games of the season, because they're not having to defer to a Christian Wood. They're not having to defer at times to an Eric Gordon, right? They're just working their one- and two-man game back and forth, Batman, Robin, Batman, and Joker, if you will, because that's what KPJ said post-game, calling himself, he and Jalen, Batman, and Joker. Talking about the fact that, I mean, it's just like the way that Jalen Green plays, like he's like, KPJ is like, I'm young, right? But he's young. And it was really funny to just kind of see his reaction and just the praise that he has for him, right? Those two guys care about each other so much and they're so bought into each other's success that that's another element, another layer to consider when you're trying to factor in their long-term, you know, future together here in Houston, whether or not KPJ is the fit next to Jalen Green for years to come. And the fact that those two guys are so bought into each other at this point, you know, it means a lot. And even Jalen, right, just his understanding of where the team is at and kind of, you know, what like that final shot looks like, and just believing in anybody on the team, like saying anybody on the team can take that shot, right? He believes in everybody that's on the floor. That type of mentality goes a long way in setting the tone for a locker room, setting a tone for an organization, for a team. And again, I walk away very impressed by both of the games that these two guys had in this one. But KPJ specifically, again, notching his first career triple-double after having his, you know, the one earlier this season waved off, unfortunately. 30 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, one block, only three turnovers, 11 of 17 shooting, 4 of 10 from the three-point line, 4 of 5 from the charity stripe. Kevin Porter Jr. is now the youngest player after Luka Doncic and Magic Johnson to have 30 points, 12 rebounds, and 12 assists in a game. Those are the only other two guys ahead of him, Luka and Magic. That is some elite company to be in. And then not only that, but the only other players under the age of 22 to have had a game with a triple-double and a 50-point game under the age of 22 are LeBron James, Brandon Jennings, and Trae Young. So obviously Brandon Jennings is kind of another story, but like young Brandon Jennings was a problem. Trae Young and LeBron, that's some really special company to be a part of when you talk about, pardon me, just how good of a performance Kevin Porter Jr. has had and how high the highs are with KPJ's level of play, right? The ceiling is absurd and the talent level is there. And when he's in these positions where it's just him and Jalen, and they're the clear two guys at the top of the pecking order, they just look significantly better. And in this game against the Kings, what really stood out to me was the playmaking has been great, right? KPJ has done a masterful job of being a better decision maker, making cleaner decisions with the basketball, making the right reads. Sometimes it's just about making the simple read, right? It's not about the, you know, insane highlight level reads, although he did have, I think the best KPJ highlight from this game was late in the game, like under 2 minutes to go, bringing the ball up in transition, looked like Magic Johnson, right? Looked like the Showtime Lakers just weaving through like four different Kings defenders behind the back, spin, turn, all of this, gets all the way to the rim in transition, and then shovel passes it off to Usman Garuba for an easy two right at the cup. That to me was probably like the highlight assist of the night for Kevin Porter Jr. But the other part of his game that really stood out in this one was the way that he was able to finish in on the interior, right? So in this game, Kevin Porter Jr. shot 11 of 17 overall. He was 4 of 10 from the three-point line, which means he was 7 of 7 shooting inside the three-point line. And with all those makes, I believe he had one mid-range shot. No, sorry, I apologize. He had two technically kind of like mid-range shots. But then he had three shots like right in and around the rim, either dunks, layups, and then he had one a little bit further out from the paint. But it, you know, to me, it's kind of like, again, I've talked before, KPJ kind of likes to have that little like pull up, like just before he gets all the way to the rim and he kind of elevates and finishes over a defender. And for me, like that kind of, I don't want to necessarily count that as like a mid-range shot. To me, that's a bit more of like almost like same territory as like a floater, but he just shoots it like a normal like fadeaway. So seeing him be able to finish inside the arc and having that kind of help unlock the rest of his game and open things up for him is a big part of his game. And it hasn't really felt like we've seen that out of Kevin Porter Jr. as of late over these last 2-3 weeks, maybe a month or so, where he hasn't really attacked the rim effectively. Now, let's be honest, right? It's the Sacramento Kings. They don't exactly have like a super intimidating shot blocker in there to lock down the paint. We're not talking about an Embiid or a Gobert or even a Steven Adams, somebody who's going to be in the paint clogging things up and making life difficult for the driving lanes and to get things going inside. That said, it's still a promising sign to see KPJ kind of, you know, flourish that other half of his game, right? Because what makes him so elite is he is a dynamic scorer, right? He can get it done anywhere on the floor, the mid-range, inside, the three-point line. He can create for himself. And by having that threat to score from anywhere on the floor, it opens things up for him. And that's what opens things up for his teammates. And that's why he gets some of the insane assists that you see, because teams have to either choose, all right, we're either going to let him go one-on-one and he's probably going to beat his man, or we have to send some help, you know, send a help defender, send a double team, whatever, to get the ball out of his hands. And he's, you know, got the playmaking and the vision to then find his teammates when those opportunities arise. So I loved what we saw out of KPJ in this game, loved what we saw out of Jalen Green in this game. Both of those guys having some really historic nights. Again, we've gone through all the different accolades and records that those two have broken from this game against Sacramento Kings. Coming up, I do want to talk about Usman Garuba, his first career start, the minutes that he got, and Bruno Fernando And the fact that the Rockets might actually have something with him. And we're going to get into some tankathon scenarios. I'm going to kind of clean up some of the confusion around what happens in some tiebreaker scenarios with the worst records in the NBA. But first, a quick message from our friends over at Bet Online, because after months of playing, college basketball has determined the top teams for the Final Four and will determine this year's national champion this coming week. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your betting needs, all your sports info, from the latest odds, contests, and player props. You name it, they have it over at BetOnline. Now, also when it comes to BetOnline, right, it's the best spot for all of your latest sports scores and podcasts. It has everything. It's got reviews for all of the leagues this season. And I don't know about you, but at this point, I feel like the money that I'm going to have to place, when it comes to betting, it's got to be, I'm really torn, but I've got to go with Duke. I've got to go with Paolo Banchero. I think that they are going to be the ones to walk away winning it all. But you can throw a little bit of money down over at Bet Online. And it's not just basketball. Bet Online is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino games. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action available to you. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, final thoughts from this Rockets-Kings game, and I want to focus on here Usman Garuba as well as Bruno Fernando. Look, I know that normally we don't talk about Bruno. No. But we're going to talk about Bruno. Let's talk about Usman Garuba first, though, because Garuba got his first career start. Scored 8 points, got 7 boards in 26 minutes, 3 of 5 shooting from the floor. No assists, no steals, no blocks, no turnovers. Not a crazy stellar night from Garuba. Like, had some good contests here and there, but there were also some moments where it felt like on, like, some box out opportunities where the Rockets gave up, some easy offensive rebounds to the Sacramento Kings, where Garuba maybe should have been in slightly better positioning preemptively. But I also, here's my thing, right, is I don't want to overreact and also possibly underreact to these final few games of the season, because Garuba hasn't gotten burn all season long, right? He wasn't getting significant burn early in the season because the Rockets had so many other guys ahead of him in the rotation. And even the very few garbage time minutes that he was getting, right, it was 2 minutes, not even 5 minutes here and there. And then he got sent down to RGV, was really productive down with RGV. Then hurt his wrist, had to rehab that, get that back up to speed. And so he's just, he's had a down year, unfortunately, where he hasn't been able to really be folded into what the Rockets are trying to do. But that being said, you do see some of the flashes, right, of the defensive capability. He reads things quickly defensively. He's got all the tools to be a premier elite defender at the NBA level. The question mark, though, is just offensively, right? The three-point shot, it looks better than it used to, but it still, to me, still looks a little iffy. And honestly, it's just that side of his game, right? Being a decision maker offensively, rolling hard to the rim and doing the most with it. When he does get the ball, off the bounce, as the roller going to the rim, because I don't think he's really going to be a pick and pop threat, effectively. Right. I mean, maybe, if you're being super optimistic about where he's at, but I think he's going to be, again, a defensive stalwart at the NBA level and somebody that you want to set hard screens offensively, roll hard to the rim, and just kind of see what he's got. But, not a bad night from Usman Garuba. Just didn't, do a ton with the 26 minutes that he did get on the floor. Now, a guy who did do a ton with the minutes that he got on the floor, Bruno Fernando, 22 minutes played, had 17 points on 6 of 8 shooting, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block. I already highlighted one of his assists earlier on, right? The backdoor cut to Jalen Green, and Jalen had the insane finish off of that one. Bruno was he busted out the Euro step at one point. He had spins. He had little baby hooks. He has a lot. I didn't realize Bruno had all of this in his bag. And I don't think a lot of people realized that Bruno had this in his bag. I don't even know if the Celtics realized that he had this. The Rockets may have lucked out and gotten a guy who could conceivably be a piece moving forward. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not sitting here saying, cast away Usman Garuba, Bruno is the new hotness. That's not how that works. But for what was essentially chalked up to like just a throw-in addition to that trade with the Boston Celtics, to have Bruno have some moments like this to kind of show what he can do on the basketball floor, it's exciting. It's kind of enticing to see what he might be able to be capable of. And the area that we really haven't seen him utilize on the floor is his shooting. Now, Bruno is like technically a stretch five. Like, he can shoot the three ball. We haven't seen him really do it well in any of these games, unfortunately, but pregame, he practices that shot. And he, like, I remember like one of the first, you know, pregames, like right after the trade, when he and Schroeder and everybody are warming up, and Bruno sunk like 7 or 8 triples, like in a row from, I think it was like one of the, like the right wing or something, just watching him warm up pregame before, you know, before the tip off later that night. And again, I didn't want to get like irrationally high about the idea of like, oh yeah, Bruno, like another like stretch five, like, you know, five out offense, all of that. But if that's something that he also has in his arsenal, in his repertoire, in addition to the ridiculous level of like post play that we just kind of saw against the Kings. Now, again, the Kings are the Kings. They don't have like a legitimate post presence to stop a Bruno Fernando from going off on them. But it's still nice to see these little flashes and think, well, maybe there's something there, right? And this is what that end of season stretch is about. It's for Steven Silas to kind of take a look at a bunch of different guys, to get a look at a bunch of different lineups, and to kind of experiment and toy around with some things and see kind of what he has. And with Bruno, maybe the Rockets lucked into something there. I don't know. It's possible. It's pretty exciting because he's doing the most with the minutes that he gets whenever he's out on the floor. And that's all you can ask of a player who is at the end of the bench and is just looking for a chance to prove themselves. So, sorry, we had to talk about Bruno, but I do want to wrap things up here by talking about the NBA draft lottery odds. And that's been a topic of contention, a topic of debate. You know, one of the main areas of discourse for Rockets fans as of late is just what's going to happen into the season, how the record ultimately looks, and where the Rockets are at. They're very much in, like, I think, you know, they're in a 3-man race with the Orlando Magic and the Detroit Pistons to try and bottom out and finish as the worst team in the NBA, so that the lowest their pick can be in the NBA draft lottery is pick number 5. Again, if you are the worst team in the NBA, the lowest your lottery odds can go is pick number 5. If you're the second worst, the lowest they can go is pick number 6. Third worst, lowest they can go is 7, et cetera, et cetera. Now, one of the questions that I've seen thrown around, and one of the you know, biggest like areas of confusion, is what happens if there's a tie, right? Like, what happens if the Orlando Magic and the Rockets finish with the exact same record? What happens before the draft lottery takes place is there are a series of coin flips conducted by the NBA. I actually don't know who like does the coin flips. I don't know if it's like Adam Silver just like sitting in a, you know, broom closet somewhere, like flipping quarters, whatever. There are coin flips, probably professionally done coin flips, with like satin gloves and like, you know, a little felt mat and everything. I don't know. But there are professionally done coin flips, and that's what determines the tiebreakers between teams that finish with the same record, you know, especially in the draft lottery circumstances. So let's say, for example, Orlando and Houston finish with both with an identical record this season, then there will be a coin flip to decide who is the, you know, who essentially gets categorized as the worst team, the number one, and who gets categorized as the number two from the lottery standpoint purposes. So that is another reason why you want to make sure that you are, again, possibly the worst team of the bunch, because you don't want to have to be dealing with, you know, the fate of a coin flip, which could ultimately decide, be the difference between picking in the top 4 or picking all the way down at 6 or 7. Like, it's tough. Same deal if it's a 3-way tie. I believe it is multiple coin flips at the same time. I actually don't know the tiebreaker between the 3-way. Like, it's still coin flips, but I don't know how you get like a 3-way tie and multiple coin flips. I don't know if they do 2 teams versus each other, or like they say, all right, whatever team comes out tails, then we like 86 that one. That one I wasn't able to find the specifics on after digging for like 30 minutes trying to figure out the actual logistics on it. But it's all still coin flips, and the Rockets can erase any chance of coin flipping if they bottom out the rest of this NBA season, which is going to be really tough to do because, again, they have that one game against the Brooklyn Nets that could conceivably, you know, you want to win that game because that could be the difference between pushing the Brooklyn pick just outside of the lottery range or pushing them just inside the NBA draft lottery and having a chance for the Brooklyn pick to jump up in the lottery standings. Like, that would be the absolute best case scenario for the Houston Rockets. And I'm curious, and I want you to, like, you know, share it with me. Like, let me know in the comments on the YouTube channel if the Rockets had to choose between being guaranteed a bottom five, worst record in the NBA, so guaranteed a top five pick, right? Like they have a chance to lose every single game the rest of the season, be the worst team in the NBA, or they could win one more game this season, specifically the Brooklyn Nets game, because it gives them and it gives the Nets a chance to push into the lottery. If that were to like knock the Rockets down to say the second worst team in the NBA to where they have a chance to fall to number six, would you risk it? Right? Like, I want to know, would you risk taking that dub against the Brooklyn Nets to have a chance to push their pick into the draft lottery? And maybe I can't say a chance, right? Like, let's say it guarantees it in the draft lottery. Cause right now the Nets are a game back of the, a half game back of the Charlotte Hornets. So if the Nets were to lose a couple more games this season, they could very well be at that 13-14 spot. They're only a game back, a half game back of the Hornets, a game back of the Atlanta Hawks, right? Whatever the inverse of that in the actual standings where people are competing for playoffs. You know what I'm trying to say. If you could guarantee that that win against the Brooklyn Nets pushed them into the draft lottery, would you sacrifice being the worst team in the association? That's the answer that I want to know. Let me know in the YouTube comments. But for today's episode, that's going to do it. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, brand new Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, be sure to check out the show on YouTube. Like I said, right, a couple times throughout the show. Go to YouTube, search Locked on Rockets, like, comment, subscribe, all that stuff. Let me know about your favorite Jalen Green or Kevin Porter Jr. highlight from this game against the Kings. Let me know about what you think about that hypothetical scenario. Would you risk being the second worst team in the NBA if it meant pushing the Brooklyn Nets pick into the draft lottery? Let me know in the YouTube comments. But as always, thank you so much for watching, so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.